This is the United Nations. We present Gene Kelly in Jungle in Retreat. UNESCO and United Nations Radio present the second in a special series, Jungle in Retreat, featuring Gene Kelly. An account of a 100-day expedition into Southeast Asia, reconstructed from original diaries, notes, and sound recordings made on the spot by a United Nations investigating team who actually saw the jungle in retreat.
Malnutrition. Order for milk. Hard to save the baby. Order for milk.
Large banana.
1 in 4 of the babies born in Southeast Asia die within 12 months. Of malnutrition, of lack of food, of lack of milk. What is being done? Part of the answer seemed to lie in the work of the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. Our job was to tour Southeast Asia and report.
Is this Mr. John Barnabas?
Yes, speaking.
This is the Military Authority Office.
This is Barnabas speaking. Head of UNICEF mission to Burma. United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund.
We have your request for passes for the United Nations investigating team.
I want 5 passes. 2 for myself and my assistant. 2 for 2 members of a mission reporting on United Nations projects in Southeast Asia, and 1 for Mr. Wong, United Nations technical assistant. Is that clear?
Your team consists of a scientific reporter, a UN photographer, and a radio recording man. Is that right?
Yes.
I'll pass you to my chief.
Oh. Hello, is that Mr. John Barnabas?
Speaking.
Please come round. We are waiting for you. Military Authority Office.
Headquarters, Rangoon.
The country between here and Mandalay is very troubled at present. You must realize we are responsible for you. Before we accept the risk, we must know what is the urgency of your going.
We want to inspect a condensed milk factory.
Please?
A condensed milk factory at Mandalay.
Why?
There's very little milk here in Rangoon. UNICEF dried milk supplies are almost finished. We want to see what steps are being taken to supply good milk in this tropical climate, safe milk.
Gentlemen, the reason for your going is inadequate.
May I convince you that milk is important, very important?
If you please.
I'm taking these gentlemen to a child clinic. If you will please accompany us, we'd be very glad.
I shared the doubts of the military authority until we had been a few minutes in the women's and children's welfare clinic. There, Dr. Earl MacPhail, a Canadian doctor lent by World Health Organization, was examining children.
Make sure the babies are unwrapped, nurse. Saves time. Next. Yes. Is he feeding on the breast?
Yes. I try.
Mm-hmm. Put the baby on milk. Order for milk, nurse. Next. Uh-huh. What is the baby fed on?
What we have.
Rice?
Yes.
Chilies?
Yes.
Well, you should give him some vegetables. Eggs, if you can buy them. But please don't give him chili. No chili. Give him some cod liver oil, nurse. Next. How old?
5 months.
I can do nothing. I'm sorry.
Yes. He was missing when I came here.
You've waited too long. The child is dead.
Yes.
Starved to death. Needed milk. Next, please, nurse.
Richie, don't these mothers feed their own children?
They can't. They have no milk. They're suffering from malnutrition. That's why 1 in 4 of the babies die.
Oh, is there no fresh milk supply, Mr. Wong?
In Mandalay, yes, but milk won't travel in the tropics. Powdered or condensed milk is the answer.
Well, that, sir, is why we want passes to visit the milk factory in Mandalay.
Gentlemen, you shall have your passes.
We took off from the bleak Rangoon airport in a plane full of chickens and milk cans. It wasn't long before we reached the milk factory at Mandalay.
Ha! You see? The farmers are bringing in their milk just now.
Where's the factory?
Here, this long shed.
You've got half a dozen enameled bathtubs on the veranda. Pure men take baths there.
We put the milk in those bathtubs. That is the first step in our process.
But look here, there's leaves and caterpillars and all sorts on top.
The farmers put leaves on top to prevent the milk spilling out. But we strain it through a muslin cloth into the bath. So.
Good Lord.
Then, you see, we light fires of wood under the bars, add sugar, and the girls stir. So we get condensed milk, which we put in these large tins.
What, these? Oil tins, Mr. Wong. They're marked oil.
Milk in oil cans. Now you see what our job is. We must get rid of the oil cans and the bathtubs and put up a modern factory. Now you see why the government of Burma has called in United Nations technical assistance and why they are going to restock here with pedigree cattle. Then they will be able to turn Mandalay into one of Asia's richest dairy lands.
I hope so.
When the money is available.
I see. Someday, then, the babies of Rangoon will be able to stop crying.
Our next assignment was in Java, where we were to see the fight against disease. A disease called Yaws, which spells slow death. Our story of Java is the story of the conquest of Yaws. We went out deep into the country to visit a makeshift clinic in the village of Karangasem.
They are beating the gong to say the team has arrived. Here they come.
Dr. Sardardi, do you expect a large number of people?
Oh, yes. Many are coming for their second injection. That man running at the head of them was a cripple when he came here first, a week ago.
A week ago? Remarkable.
Excuse me, I must attend the patients. Nurse, please see that the names and ages are on all the cards.
Very good, doctor.
There are about 25% positive yaws in this village. Make sure you get a blood slide from that man.
Yes, doctor.
This lady is Dr. Lai, who is a specialist from China.
Oh, how do you do, doctor?
Pleased to meet you.
Dr. Lai is a serologist, a blood specialist, testing of blood. Excuse me. While we are looking at this slide, Mr. Calder, will you tell them about yaws?
You know, Herb, that yaws is produced by a germ which enters through cuts and sores.
I don't, Richie. I'm not a scientist.
You see, this boy, he's a mass of sores. They've carried him here from another village. He can't walk. You see the soles of the feet? He's in misery. We shall give him his first injection of penicillin.
Penicillin cures yaws.
Please take the little boy over there. Tell him not to be frightened. Yes, a penicillin cures it. 3 out of 5 people used to have yaws here in Central Java. It's a disease which brings continual misery and death. You know that UNICEF supplies penicillin to it. Excuse me. Nurse, show me that slide.
It is positive.
Uh-huh. Yes. Please put it with the A group.
Very good, doctor. Thank you.
The results of this campaign were remarkable. It not only cured the yaws, but gave the people a new purpose in life. For example, we saw a canal which was being dug by the reinvigorated farmers to bring water to their fields. We watched them work.
It's an incredible sight. It's like stepping out of the 20th century back into the far-off ages when the pyramids of Egypt were being constructed. The Babylonian slaves must have used those primitive tools when they cut the canal which diverted the Euphrates. And with such freaks of muscular effort, the fabulous Hindu temples must have been built. But these are not Babylonian slaves. They are free farmers working for a greater freedom on an enterprise they themselves have started.
They wanted rice, and this is the hard way to get it. The hill dwellers got together and decided to cut this canal to bring water into the hills. The canal will be 45 miles long, and in places it's being chiseled out of solid volcanic rock. It's all done by hand with primitive tools, chisels, picks and hammers, with the rock cheerfully carted away in little baskets. Yes, awakened from the long half-sleep of constant disease, the farmers were fighting for a new life.
To me, the incredible work of the canal digging meant, of course, superb action pictures. But what was even more incredible was the farmers' club. We were invited to meet these diggers, these farmers, in their evening's amusement. Very well, we went, not expecting very much amusement ourselves. But, oh, we were wrong, so very wrong. Our host was called Singing Suprato, but he was also an official of the Ministry of Agriculture.
I welcome you here. I am called Suprato, but nearly everyone has the name Suprato. It is a trade name, like your baker, smith, or tailor. I sing my lessons to the farmers, so I am Singing Suprato. Now then, my happy farmers, are you happy? Huh? No. You are not happy. You all have terrible diseases. Yours, grown then. Ah, that is good. But we must always remember the good old days. No. Not the good old days, huh? Well, let us remember the old days in our own way, in the traditional way, by living them again in a little play, huh? Then we shall know whether they are good or bad. Chan, you, Chan, will be a farmer, and Dato, you will be our old friend, Fu, the moneylender. Chan, you are in your field a long time ago, Chan, and the rice is green. Huh? Now, let us begin.
Here comes Fu.
Good morning, Chan. You are working hard, I am glad to see.
I must work hard all day long.
Good, yes, very good. And your seed has come up very nice.
Yes. It is a good crop.
You would have no crop if I had not advanced the money, huh?
No, but I pay you 15% each month for interest.
But you still owe the principal, huh? What about that, huh?
I have nothing but my crop, this crop.
But I want my money. I cannot wait until harvest. No, I will give you 300 for this crop.
What can I do?
Accept my offer, you silly farmer, and the debt is clear.
Then I shall have to borrow for seed again.
I will not waste my time. Accept. I am generous to give you 350.
I suppose I must.
But today we have chased away the moneylender. Now I shall sing you a song of instruction. You must learn. You must irrigate your land, you must plant the finest seed, you must hoe out all the weeds you find. You must irrigate your land, you must plant the finest seed, you must hoe out all the weeds you find. Oh, the farmer, simple farmer, he does what?
what he's told?
No!
Well, then you must irrigate and plant all your rice.
We hated to leave this place. It seemed to us not only cheerful in itself, but a wonderful example of the kind of new life we had come so far to see. From Indonesia, we flew north to Bangkok in Thailand, and from there to Chiang Mai, set under the mountains of the Burmese frontier. Then a day's journey by jeep through teak forest to a fish farm, run by Prince Khosol Suryong. Richie, Eric, and I had each tried to keep track of our impressions, and the plane was a good place to sort things out.
Over 300,000 people employed in Indonesian fish culture, producing thousands of tons of fish per annum. What was it Prince Khosol told us?
We give the little fish to the farmers quite free, and they are put in the rice fields when they are flooded. And so, when the field is drained, there are the fish.
Note. Thailand diet short in protein. Fish will help to supply deficiency. Hence FAO help to fish farmers like Khosol.
Say, Richie, is there a population problem in Thailand?
Yes, there is. They're increasing at the rate of 300,000 a year. Within 25 years, the new mouths will eat up the 1.5 million tons of rice now exported.
Well, look, before we go any further, tell me, what's behind this population mystery? Does plenty of food mean higher birth rate, or doesn't it?
Well, some people actually suggest the opposite and find a relationship between what people eat and their capacity for producing children. On this argument, and it isn't scientifically proved, mind you, a population suffering from malnutrition will tend to have an excessive birth rate, a biological urge to survive. With proper nutrition on that argument, population tends to decline.
Are you saying that if you give all the population in Southeast Asia a balanced diet, the population problem will solve itself?
No, I'm not saying that. All I'm prepared to say is that if you raise people above the level of the beast and give them decent standards of life, the population will tend to adjust itself.
From Calcutta, we flew along the green jungle lands of Bengal up the swarming Ganges Valley. Thence to the plains of Delhi, littered with the ruins of all the Delhis which had lived and died in succession over 1,000 years. From there, we went by train to the Terai, 1.5 million acres of jungle lying at the foot of the Himalayas. In the Terai, we met Bhim Singh, a tall, vigorous Sikh with flashing white teeth and a black, burly beard. He gave a brilliant smile whenever he mentioned disaster or hardship. And he told us of his own experience as a laborer who had seen the jungle in retreat.
Until 1947... I owned my farm in Punjab, 40 acres of fertile, well-irrigated soil. But when partition came, my farm was on the wrong side of the frontier. So we carried away what we could, and with many millions of others, some going this way, some going that, some leaving India, some leaving Pakistan, some dying on the roadside, some not, we set out to begin our life again. ...400 miles we walked on foot. When we arrived, we got 15 acres per head of cleared land already rough ploughed. 54 families of refugee Punjabi farmers, who are, you will know, the finest in the world, made a farm of 800 acres here in Rudarpur.
Listen, quiet please! I have asked you of Rudarpur to meet. First, are there complaints against government?
None. I speak for all.
No. Government has lent seeds and you have built houses for yourself.
There was a man from the government looking after our houses. Had he any faults to find?
I have to tell you that. He was not a Punjabi.
So
that he was astonished at the good houses, amazed at the great cleanliness and order. That for the women.
You hear that at the bank?
Yes.
Now, you all saw the tractors.
Yes.
Some of you drove them.
I also drove a bulldozer.
If you could buy a tractor, would you?
If we had the money, we could buy a carpet of gold.
But a tractor would be worth the carpet of Kuzan.
We have money.
Yes, we have.
The women will sell our jewelry.
No.
But it was decided. Yes, by the women. They had only a little each, a life savings, but it was sufficient. Then a well was sunk 200 feet deep. Aye, that was work. Our first harvest repaid government seed. Government saw we were true farmers, and the land became ours. Next year we shall buy a harvester, and a school will be built, and a village clinic. And then, soon, electricity. Everything is possible with electricity.
There was a wonderful spirit of optimism in Rudapur. There were similar villages sprouting up all over the cleared jungle. The new homesteads and the feeling of space gave a sense of creation, and to me, a strange feeling of the frontier days in the Canadian and American West. The lesson of Tarai was clear enough. The question was, how many Rudapurs were there in Southeast Asia? How much of the new spirit of hope was going around, and how much mute acceptance of the old routine of disease and starvation? We found one answer in Cuttack at the Central Rice Research Institute in India, where the Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, was sponsoring an interesting experiment. Here, by crossbreeding various strains of rice plants, particularly the strong Japanese strains called Japonica with the Indian strain called Indica, they hoped ultimately to increase India's rice crop by 25 million tons. Then there would be no famine. The experiments were complicated, but Eric described them this way in a letter to his little daughter, Corinne.
And now, ma chère Corinne, I am going to tell you the story of Rice Prince Japonica and the nine rice princesses. Once upon a time in Riceland, there lived a royal family called Japonica. They were immensely prosperous, for their kingdom was well watered, and the soil was deep and rich. The climate was mild, so that every year each of them grew a great number of beautiful heavy heads, and so too did their children and their children's children. And the proudest head of all was Rice Prince Japonica. Meanwhile, in a far-off land, there lived a family of lineage equally ancient and prolific, but fallen on hard times. Their land was poor, the climate was hot, and the summer days were short, for they lived near the equator, so that they had very few heads, and those were very small. And one of the smallest was Rice Princess Indica. But, of course, her head was exquisitely attractive to all admirers of the Rice family. One fine day, the great magician Feo, who was, of course, a graduate bachelor of science, sent messengers all over the East calling for suitors for the hand of Princess Indica. For although she was so small, she had 300 million subjects, each of whom would give their lives for her, and every day they saluted her. When the news of this reached Prince Japonica, he set out at once, and when he presented himself at the court of Indica, it was clear to everybody, and especially to Magician Feo, that he was the strongest and richest of all, and that he should have the hand of the princess. And here my story should have ended, and would have ended very happily, but for a mischievous imp. This imp went all over the eastern lands, whispering to everyone who belonged to the Indigo Rice Blood Royal.
Why?
He said.
Should that Princess Indica have the hand of the Rice Prince just because she happens to be living in India? There were plenty of much more attractive girls who could also call themselves Princess Indica.
So, when the prince came forward to claim the princess, he saw not one, but nine princesses, all called Indica, all beautiful and all very slim and with tiny ears. As soon as he saw them, he loved them all. And because by the ancient customs of Riceland, a rice prince may have nine wives, he married them all. And their children and their children's children will rule the rice lands of the East. And so, Corinne, ma petite, by blending the Japanese Japonica rice with the Indian Indica rice, 400 million people may hope to have enough food to live happily ever after.
Yes, the new rice bringing new food and strength to the peoples of Southeast Asia. But that's for tomorrow. For today...
Order for the milk, nurse.
Give the baby vegetables and milk.
Try to save the baby. Order for milk.
Next, please.
Yes, next. Of all the jungles, this is the slowest in retreat. The jungle of hunger. It seems to me that this word jungle is a pretty good word to describe the tangled lines of superstition, disease, prejudice, and neglect, all woven into what seemed an impenetrable mass. But it was good, too. Yes, very good. To see the enterprise of those scientists, the courage of the doctors and nurses, the skill of the farmers and engineers, and the people themselves. They are making clearings in the jungle of hunger.
Gene Kelly has just told you part two of a great new world adventure, Jungle in Retreat. Now, the story behind this broadcast. It concerns a blueprint, a well-worked-out United Nations plan of action. The UN and its agencies rooting out the weeds of discontent wherever in the world they may grow. This evening you heard part of that blueprint come to life. You watched men of many nations helping each other. You saw countries explaining their needs, mobilizing their manpower and resources to help themselves. That's the international cooperation the United Nations stands for and strives for. And that is the story behind this program. The UN in action, improving standards of life and social progress in larger freedom, contributing to international security and peace.
This program is presented by United Nations Radio and UNESCO. Narration by Gene Kelly. Music by Matthias Scheiber. Script by Francis Dillon, based on documented findings by Richie Calder, Herbert Steinhaus, and Eric Schwab of the UN reporting team in Southeast Asia. Jungle in Retreat is produced by Lawrence Gilliam and Gerald Keane of United Nations Radio.